In the year 1831, biologist Charles Darwin began a fateful journey on the HMS Beagle. On that journey, Darwin formulated the controversial theory of evolution, which has impacted society down to this day.
Our goal is to punch holes in that theory, so we'd like to welcome you to
Sink the Beagle.
Fire one, Captain!
Way to go, Stan. What a shot.
Well, there that ship goes down with that puppy, the Beagle. The HMS Beagle goes down to the depths.
Bloop, 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 bloop. I'm John Kurlinski.
I am Stan Hudson. We want to welcome you to another episode of
Sink the Beagle, where we take lighthearted looks at the serious issues of evolution and creation, because they are important, lightheartedly, because we don't know other way.
That is correct, and nevertheless, it's a serious thing to send the ship to the bottom. Evolutionary theory, we feel, it does just that when good science and good scripture combine to produce evidence, which causes holes in the ship.
And we have a little bit of evidence today.
Oh.
Incredibly little evidence.
It's a tiny bit of evidence.
It's actually evidence that we are going to use on Sink the Beagle to replace one of the long-held creationist evidences against evolution, the old famous bombardier beetles often used from years past, where this little beetle has these special chambers that shoot hot, stinky, poisonous gas at its prey, you know, and just lets them have it and can call up this volatile
explosive chemicals. There's no question about it. You put them all in one place in Kaplowie. It is a bombardier beetle, all right.
Microbiologists like Michael Behe and others have championed the bombardier beetle, but we got a new insect.
Well,
small insect.
Yes, and not even a beetle, not a Paul or a George.
More like Ringo.
Well, actually, it does have it's called a spittle bug.
A spittle bug, not a beetle bug, a spittle bug.
Spittle bug.
No, it's a little beetle that chews stuff and then kind of spits it all over. It looks kind of like a beetle on tobacco. Chewing tobacco beetle.
That's a nice mental image, isn't it? But actually, they're called frog hoppers more commonly.
Frog hoppers,
and we're not talking about frogs, but we are talking about hoppers.
And this little 6 millimeter long frog hopper.
How big is 6 millimeters? It's about a period on a page or something. We're talking small.
We're talking real small. 6 millimeters that's pretty tiny. But this frog hopper can leap.
Uh-huh.
This little hopper is truly the world's greatest leaper.
Ah, better than Carl Lewis and all these other Olympians and everybody.
Yeah, they can leap. They can leap. You know, Superman really flies. He's not really a leaper. But if this frog hopper were Superman, in other words, a human, it could leap the equivalent in a single bound of very tall buildings.
210 meters, I see written here by the scientists who are talking about this. That's able to leap a 60-story building with a single bound.
Or 62-story building, to be more precise.
Wow. Okay.
That is a big building if you compare comparative anatomy, and kind of multiply it. I know, it was easier for you to say than me. Anyway, the whole point is that this little creature can jump 70 centimeters. You know, when you consider 6 millimeter jumping 70 centimeters, it's about 2.5, 3. How many feet is that?
So about 2 1/3 feet. Yeah,
yep,
about
24 inches.
About 30. Yeah, all right, exactly. About
28 inches. Whoa! And when you consider it's just a speck on the page, that is a tall leap. There's other things you can compare about it. Just to continue on the comparison analogy here.
What can this little bug do anyway?
Well, not only can it leap, but it also is very fast. When it leaps, they have timed its acceleration.
Okay.
It accelerates when it starts. When it explodes.
How it hits the gas.
When it puts its pedal to the metal, it takes off at 4,000 meters per second.
Okay, and accelerates.
That's acceleration.
So per second.
Per second.
4,000 meters. Now that's per second. Yeah, that would mean that 4,000 meters is like more than 2 miles.
Two miles a second.
Yeah. Okay. If you stretched, my goodness, that's fast.
That's not the speed of light, but boy, that bug. That's a fast bug.
Now if the
try
bug
to catch
is,
that.
if that bug is growing, is going that fast, then that would create G-forces, right?
G-forces.
Gravity forces.
Gravity. Like, in other words, when you, when you're on the, you go to a circus, and you're, and there's this one ride that just called the Roundup was the name of it.
Oh, yeah.
And you get on there, it's, like, it's like a big gerbil cage laid on its side.
Tilt-a-whirl kind of thing.
And, or the tilt-a-whirl, and it starts spinning fast. And it just kind of glues you. It can go upside down, and you're glued in position. And it's like a, when the, it's same force you feel when you go on a roller coaster and it spins around and goes upside down. You are stuck by momentum.
Well, you are, and I are experiencing 1G right now, one gravity, the equivalent of one gravitational force here by the Earth. If we experience two, it has the equivalent of feeling like we're twice as heavy. We're being spun around
like,
and
that's
so
what
forth.
That's what happens on Thanksgiving and Christmas dinners and all those special occasions. You get two gravities on those days.
Boy, gravity is particularly strong today.
Two G's mean two gravies. The whole point is this.
So that's where gravity is.
Astronauts, though, you know, when they get
gravity of the same root structure. Yes.
Heavy, weighty. We have a lot of gravitas on this show.
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do.
Gravy with the potatoes.
Yes. Well, the whole point is that, like, when astronauts, an example, when they when you shoot an astronaut into space,
they
experience
forces
up to 6 or 7 G's.
Okay, six or seven.
Almost make
you
black out.
That's a huge amount. Well, what about this little bug that's doing the 4,000-meter thing?
400 gravities.
100 G's.
That's a lot of mashed potatoes, man.
That little bitty guy probably feels like 20 pounds or something. Just squish.
And he's flying through that.
And he's jumping with that kind of gravity force.
Wow. You know, what they've done is they've...
Evolution wonderful, John?
Ain't evolution wonderful? You know, Professor Burroughs wrote in the journal Nature, and he says this here. Says, for their size, frog hoppers outperform other insects. They exceed the height jumped by the flea relative to body length, accelerate their much heavier bodies 4 times faster, and people might have seen fleas.
Yeah, fleas just really go.
They go. And what they, where is the secret, though, for this little critter?
I assume it's in the legs, right? It's got to be in the leg bones.
One big leg. Well, it says the insect's hind legs are so specialized for jumping. Now, well, excuse me. Let's correct this evolutionary scientist's terms.
Okay.
These insects' hind legs just so luckily happened to come about
by
for jumping
random,
by sheer accident, random choice over many millions of years. That when when they're walking, when they're walking, they're just dragging along the ground.
Okay.
In other words, when this insect isn't hopping, he just literally
he's
dragging a ball and chain. Though the picture is here, it can't get around. It becomes easy prey unless it's jumping.
Boing.
How could it? You know, you can just imagine one day this poor insect's walking along with his bum leg. You know, kind of a pogo, you know, just kind of wishing he had a peg leg or dragging down a ball and chain. And all the birds are eating. He says, I'm getting sick by getting eaten by these other insects and these bigger critters.
I'm going to jump 28 inches.
I'm going to just jump. And the first time, pow, he's up there. No, or maybe he started by saying,
only
he can jump.
Inches.
Maybe the first time he only jumped a quarter inch.
Yeah.
Or twice as high. Okay. Or three times as high.
Man, I wish I could do this better.
And maybe that one got away from the spider that tried to get him.
That's it.
If I could only get that and get my kids to do that. And so he held classes.
Yes.
And he got his offspring to start jumping. And pretty soon,
exactly.
And pretty soon, the only ones that survived were the ones that were
they
jumping.
They cleared 28 inches on the high jump.
Yeah, the high jump. Because anyone under 20, it was probably eaten. You know?
Yes. So because the worst critters are 27 inches high.
Yes. So that's how it must have happened, how he evolved.
How fortunate.
And you know what happens, they say, don't know that when they go along, energy is built up on their hind legs by a slow contraction before the jump. So they have to be able to time that jump versus timing the bite. So they have to have a brain to figure out, okay, that bird's about to peck at me. 3, 2, 1.
Go!
And just to time it to get away.
Yeah.
And so the evolutionary process involved in that,
that specialized ability
to hop and to develop it and to evolve it over time is incredible.
And it kind of points to something maybe a little bit more than random chance or pure luck or whatever. Seems to be that it was designed that way.
Oh, man.
Just sort of, doesn't it?
Where does that bug get all that information?
I know.
Just out of pure luck.
Well, if there's a design, then there may be a designer. What do you think?
What do you think? Let's have a torpedo text today, Stan.
A torpedo text from Psalms 104, which is really, listeners, a really great psalm to look at.
On creation.
Oh, beautiful.
Uh-huh. Read us a passage.
Here's something down at verse 24 and 25. It says, O Lord, how manifold are thy works. In wisdom hast thou made them all.
That's a lot of stuff.
The earth is full of thy riches. So is great the great and wide sea, wherein all things, all are things creeping innumerable, both small and great beasts.
Yeah. So what we have here is land and sea. God's made all kinds of, I bet you there's a lot more incredible things like frog hoppers or bombardier beetles in both the seas and on the lands that are creeping. This is manifold things that he has done. And in wisdom, he's created things that are uncountable, would probably be a better thing, or unbelievable almost from at least an evolutionary point of view.
Well, and, you know, in this particular, Bud, like you say, there may be others out there, but it says this particular article that we're referencing says this bug has been fairly unnoticed until now. How many other great creatures are there still that haven't been studied yet?
Or noticed.
In which, that their remarkable abilities would again point to a designer.
Yeah, and how long have they continued? Are they in the geologic column? Where do you find all these things? And just to say they happen by random, there's just, you know, not enough time, not enough billions of years in my book to create by chance mutation such phenomenal uniqueness, such phenomenal ability of a creature. Now, obviously, you're doing a comparative analogy in the G-force is sort of irrelevant when you get smaller things. And, you know, I understand physics and things change. You're less susceptible to gravity's impact. But the whole point being that just to be able to launch that high and the explosive power, any way you look at it, is just phenomenal.
Not bad for pond scum that just sort of kind of hopped out on one day and thought, you know, I've had it being pond scum. I'm going to be something bigger. I have greater images of what I should be.
Instead of being a 10-celled creature, I'm going to become 6 millimeters in length and jump like mad.
Man, and they'll never catch me.
Nope.
Well, it does seem to point to the creator.
Another designer.
Another designer.
Another argument for design. Mm-hmm. And whether they know it or not, the explosive gases of a bombardier beetle or the explosive jump of a little frog hopper point to a being who delights in just intricacies and the smallness of life as well as the big things. And I always think of it this way. If he can take such care in designing things that small, yet he even takes a greater delight in designing creatures that speak and can notice these things and appreciate them for all their complexity.
And how about those that are
and the mind behind it
and designed in his own image, made in his own image.
Yes.
To be able to appreciate what he made.
And that's the incredible part. And that's the part that really leads me from design into my own life. Maybe I'm designed too. Mm-hmm. And if I'm designed, there's a bigger being out there that is really who can even notice his things, and I must matter to him too.
Well, the little frog hopper may be something special, John, but you and I created in God's image, and all of the wonderful people of the world, they are something very special in God's eyes. Where the hairs are numbered on our heads, we are something unique. We've got abilities that frog hoppers will never have.
Nope. We can talk, share, and appreciate what they are. And beyond that, we can commune with the creator who made us. And that leads from design to actually being designed, leading to meaning, purpose, worship, all those wonderful things.
Those great issues that we talk about in a lighthearted way here. So we want you to tune again and for another Sink the Beagle.
Thanks for listening to Sink the Beagle. We'd like to send you a special gift just for being with us today. Write to our email address, beagle@lifetalk.net, and ask for your free copy of Dr. Dwight Nelson's book called Built to Last, A Thoughtful Look at Creation and Evolution. Ask for Built to Last when you write to beagle@lifetalk.net. And be sure to listen in next time for Sink the Beagle.
So join us here each week, my friends. You're sure to get a smile. From 7 stranded castaways here on Gilligan's Isle.